Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
Okay, well, let me do this. I know a couple of you have been in some of my other sessions, so I apologize. You'll get kind of the brief, like, here again, a little bit of my backstory. But I'll give you guys just a little bit of my backstory. And then our session today is really talking about culture, creating a dynamic team culture, which is one of my personal greatest passions. I started out, I was born and raised in northern Wisconsin, came to faith at 8 years old, but it was a distinct moment for our family. My great uncle invited us to church. My parents had been through a divorce when I was five, and kind of a rocky few years as my mom was trying to figure out the dynamics of being a single mom with two kids and pretty kind of poor rural area that we lived in. So it's just a challenging season for us as a family. My great uncle invited us to church. We plugged in, got involved, gave our lives to Christ, and it was a distinct turning point in our story as a family. And so I trace back my love for the church to that moment because it was truly a volunteer. My great uncle was the piano player and church organist, and he invited us to church. You know, it was a small little country church of about 100 people, and he volunteered every time the doors were open, and because of his willingness to invite and then his willingness to invest in us as a family, changed our course. And I'm sure a lot of you have experienced stories like that or have personal stories like that. And so the love of the church just was instilled pretty early for me. And the significance of the church and its impact on people's lives. Stayed involved in the church growing up, went to a Christian college for a couple of years, wanted to study the music business. I've always loved music, quickly learned that I was not so much a performer, but I was more of a leadership and administration are my two top spiritual gifts. And so those things kind of played themselves out in my desire to work in the business side of music. So I wanted to work with Christian artists in Nashville, Tennessee at a particular at a company called Forefront Records. And so I did that, got an internship there, worked there for 9 years on staff. Should I close that door, do you think? Is that distracting? If anybody comes, they can. Thank you. Slide in. Worked 9 years on staff and worked with we'll test everybody's age. Any DC Talk fans in the room? Yes, yes. Audio Adrenaline, Stacey Orrico, Skillet, like a lot of pop and rock stuff that was coming out in the 90s and the early 2000s, I got to work on, which was just a blast. Thought that I would do that my entire life. Wanted to be a record company CEO. And then God throws you a curveball, like I'm sure he's done to a few of you. And the church that my husband and I were helping to plant, just as volunteers, that lead pastor reached out to me and he said, hey, would you ever leave the music business and come and work for the church? And I thought, I had never been a part of a large church. This church at the time was a few hundred people, so it was a good-sized church, but it wasn't like an enormous church. And I thought, well, what would I do on church staff? You know, leadership and administration, I've been a business girl for the last 9 years doing marketing and brand development. What would I do at a church staff? And through a lot of conversations, a lot of prayer, and then really the light bulb moment happened for me. One day I was directing the services as a volunteer, and Pete Wilson, who's the lead pastor at Crosspoint Church, he was up at the stage teaching. We were meeting in a school cafeteria, really the cafetorium. It was a cafeteria with the stage, which made it the cafetorium. I'm standing by the stinky milk cooler that, you know, all the little middle schoolers have spilled their nasty sour milk all over, and watching him teach, and I just felt like God say, Jenny, I want you to take your strengths and gifts and put it behind this vision. Because I've been doing that for Christian artists. I've been helping them understand their vision and how to live that out and share their message through music and, you know, putting all of my time and energy into leading teams to accomplish that. And I felt like God was saying, I want you to do that for this vision, for this local church. So friends in the music business said I was committing career suicide, but it was just one of those moments where you know that God's called you to something and it's obedience, so you go. And so I landed in ministry, and I was on staff at Crosspoint for 9 years as executive director. And Crosspoint, if you know its story a little bit, grew from that small little stinky cafetorium into five locations throughout the Nashville area, now six since I've left. They reach over 7,500 people a weekend. Just a wonderful church, just an amazing opportunity to be a part of it. Never thought I'd leave. I settled in there again saying, I'll be here for forever, God. This is great. I've got my community. I've got my circle. I've got this wonderful church. I've got a great team. It had its ups and downs and, you know, the good days and the bad days. But all in all, we were really in what felt like our sweet spot. And then a pastor on the West Coast reached out and said, hey, I need an executive pastor to come out here and help us with some new initiatives at Menlo Park Pres. And we just chuckled. I told my husband, and he just laughed. He's a good old Georgia boy, so the idea of him moving to the West Coast was just laughable. And when we told friends we were moving, some of them said, and your husband's going with you. Because, I mean, they knew he was, like, just born and bred, like, Southern boy. Like, so the idea of him moving to the West Coast was just funny. But we did. It was another one of those journeys where you feel like God is calling you to something, and so you go. And so we went to Menlo Park Pres, and I served on staff there for 2 years. And in that time, we kind of reorganized their team to really be a more of a multi-site focused church. The Bay Area, if you're familiar with the San Francisco Bay Area, housing prices have now eclipsed New York City. It's the most expensive place in the country to live. It's outrageous just because of all the tech growth in Silicon Valley. And so property, you know, if you think it's difficult to find a church location for some of your locations, I've never seen anything like this. It's a whole other level. So multi-site is really the strategy for growth because you can't build the biggest auditorium or worship center at Menlo is 700 seats, and we couldn't even replicate anything else like that because it's just so difficult to find property. So small churches throughout the Bay Area was the goal, and so we reorganized for that, launched a new campus, kind of got that set and going, and then God just continued to open doors for me to talk leadership and culture development with church teams and nonprofit teams all over the country. So that is my newest endeavor, and just a great joy to be able to work with churches and leaders. And my deep passion is leadership development. I just kind of bleed it. All things leadership development and helping leaders lead from their extraordinary best. Because I think a healthy, thriving leader leads to a healthy, thriving team, which leads to a healthy, thriving church, and ultimately that leads to extraordinary impact, which is what we're all hoping to accomplish. It's probably why all of you are sitting in these seats, is that there's something extraordinary God's put on your heart for you to accomplish in the ministry and the community that you're a part of. And so that's kind of the goal, but that really hinges on healthy leaders, healthy teams, healthy churches to get to that. So that's my heartbeat, is trying to say, what can I do to help leaders lead from their extraordinary best? And one of the big pieces of that is culture. And just the dynamics of a team culture and how significant it is to an organization. Part of what I've experienced is as organizations grow and change, culture grows and changes. And if we're not aware of that, and if we're not really managing that and stewarding that well, all of a sudden we have a culture that we're not familiar with and we don't know what to do with it because it wasn't what we thought it would be. And I remember one season just kind of waking up and going, we had, you know, in the early days of church planting, what do? Anybody who's a willing and able body joins the team and is, you know, partners up with you and you get stuff done. And that's part of the early stages of church planting and startup and new. And then at some point in the journey, you know, you have to grow up a little bit. I used to say that there was a season for us at Crosspoint where we were the lanky teenager and that everything was growing like crazy, but we didn't know how to handle these limbs. You know, any of you parents of teenagers in the room, it's like they haven't quite grown into their bodies. And sometimes we're like that as an organization. And there was a season for us like that at Crosspoint. And I realized that our culture was starting to drift, like that culture that we had wanted to keep as a team in having a healthy, vibrant staff culture, people who enjoyed being together, loved working together, was starting to drift, and we needed to be paying attention to it, or it was going to go someplace that we didn't intend for it to go. So culture is, I think, really, really important, and it's something we often will overlook because we're focused on that extraordinary impact. We're focused on that outcome we're seeking, and we can miss the little cultural elements that are ultimately going to either help us get to that impact or they're going to derail us from that. So what I want to do in our time together is I want to talk about just what is culture, because there's a little bit of definition required in that are we talking about the same thing? Why does culture matter? And then how do we create a great culture? And so we're going to dig into those three questions, kind of unpack this a little bit. And at any point, guys, this is a little more, a room that's a little more comfortable for discussion. So if at any point you want to like ask a question or kind of just ask me to clarify something, jump in. Like let's just make this more conversational, because I think the more I can cater this to the things that matter to you, the more valuable it's going to be in helping you with your teams. So I would say we all probably agree that culture matters, or you wouldn't be in the room. Like something caused you to say, I'm going to go into that workshop because there's so many good ones. We talked about that. So you know that culture matters, but it's intangible, isn't it? And it's a bit hard to describe. Like, you know when a culture is good. Describe for me, anybody, like, what's your favorite place, store to go into? Costco? Who said that? Totally a dude. Okay, so why Costco? Which one of you said that?
It has everything in it, and it has a lot of everything.
So that's probably something you value. Like, it has what you need, one stop, get what you need for good prices.
Chick-fil-A.
Tell me what's good about the culture.
They're friendly and the food is always good.
Yes. Yep.
Apple.
Yep. What's good about, what makes the Apple culture?
Probably the opposite of Costco. There's not a million choices. It's nice
yeah.
and clear.
So. Yep. 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 And predictable. You know what you're going to get.
Yeah. And my kids like it.
And your kids like it. Yeah. Yep. That's good. That's good. Any other places that come to mind?
Publix.
Well, okay. Why Publix?
I love that.
I miss Publix. Their staff, not the customers. Yeah. Conversely, my husband and I were at the bank the other day, and he got so irritated because he goes in and there's a branch of our bank like literally across the street from our house. So we're there all the time. You know, it's super convenient. It's great, and they know us pretty well. And so we'll go in, and they're very friendly, but it's almost like it's almost forced friendly. Like, you know that somebody's trying to teach culture in their system, and so it's like they're robots that are like doing it, but it's not. It still feels inauthentic. And I thought that was an interesting take on culture, because it's still not authentic yet in the culture. So there was that kind of dynamic too, that sometimes it's, you can sniff it out whether it's they're doing it because somebody's told them to do it, or it's truly become such a deeply embedded part of the culture that it's an overflow of Publix. You both said Publix. Do you guys know each other?
No.
Yeah. So there's an example of, you know, something that they've obviously been able to embed it in the culture, and it's an actual overflow of what they do and who they are. Chick-fil-A, I think, does that extraordinarily well, because I think I've rarely been to a Chick-fil-A that you didn't get that level of customer service like that. So that's, like, those are some of the, like, once we start drilling on it, we can start to describe culture, but it's hard to put into terms, isn't it? We've all seen great cultures, or even been a part of great cultures, and they're environments that we enjoy being a part of. Like, it's places we want to go. We had, so one of our family jokes, does anybody remember Circuit City? They all went out of business, which I think is quite telling. I hated going to Circuit City. Like, my husband could never understand this, but I hated Circuit City. I was fine to go to Best Buy. I hated to go to Circuit City because it was like, usually it was a little dingy looking. They were trying to sell too hard. Like, okay. So and my that stuff didn't bother my husband, but like culturally I was like, I would rather stay in the car. I don't want to walk into that environment. How many of you have had a work environment like that? If your boss is in the room, you don't have to answer. But it's true, isn't it? You've probably been a part of a team that you enjoyed showing up. You might not have even like loved the actual job. Like, if I go back to my music business days, when I was first there, you know, entry-level job, I was like shredding paper and filing paperwork. Like, I wasn't doing anything like extraordinarily wonderful, because I started as an intern, and then I was like a part-time, they called it the file keeper. It's real glamorous. But I loved being there. I loved showing up for work every day because the culture of the organization was vibrant. People wanted to be there. They were passionate about what they were doing. There's an energy about it that made it a fun place to work, even though the actual task that I was doing was kind of mediocre. Conversely, I've been in roles where I was doing the thing that I thought like I was best gifted to do, but the culture was kind of miserable and I didn't stay. And so culture matters significantly to our team. So let's talk about, let's give some more definition to it. What is culture? I'm sorry, these are a little small on these TV screens. What is culture? By definition, it's the beliefs and customs of a particular group. The beliefs and customs of a particular group. It's a way of thinking, behaving, or working that exists in a place or an organization. So this is like just the Webster's definition of culture, but can starts to put a little language to what culture is. It's beliefs and customs. We can kind of get that, right? And a way of thinking, behaving, or working that exists in a place or an organization. I'll let a few of you kind of take some notes on that, and then we'll jump ahead to another working definition. In a little more layman's terms, culture is your church's DNA. It's kind of that thing that makes you unique. It's that set of idiosyncrasies that makes you unique. And I bet if I were able to go around the room, I could challenge each one of you to tell me a little bit about your church and your church culture. And there would be some similarities because we all have an overarching kind of, you know, shared vision of what the church is. But once I get you into your local context, your community, the people who make up your church, you're going to start telling me some of the uniquenesses about who you are as a church and kind of what separates you, makes you maybe a little bit different from the church across town, right? It's basically your church's personality. And then, you know, there's two layers to this. You've got the culture of your church as a whole, and then you've got the culture of your staff team and how your staff team works and behaves. And I will zero in today a little bit more on, like, your team. So how many of you have paid staff that work with you? Just getting a gauge of the room. Okay, so a good number of you. And then I'm suspecting the rest of you probably have at least high-capacity volunteers that are kind of your core group. Is that fair to say? Okay, so when I talk about team, I'm talking about those two groups, your either paid staff or your, you know, high-capacity volunteer teams, like that core group that are your go-to people. And so for most of our conversation, I'm going to focus on that because that's your immediate circle of influence. That's the immediate team you're leading. But it's also good to keep in mind that there's an overarching culture to your church. So you need to understand that and know what that is. Probably spent more time defining that. I bet you have church values. A number of you probably have kind of at least a mission, vision, values that framework that you started with at least when you launched the church. So you've got some semblance of what that is. Oftentimes, we're not as we don't take as much time or put as much clarity into what's that culture, what's that DNA of our team as we work and as we function together. And it is naturally an overflow of the church, but it will go a layer deeper. And this is where some of the work needs to be done for us as leaders, is to help clarify that and define why we want what we want that culture to be and why it matters. If we go back to like the Chick-fil-A example, Chick-fil-A probably has a couple of values that are consistent with fast food restaurants overall, right? But if they just had the values of a fast food restaurant, they wouldn't have the uniquenesses that they have as an organization. So there's layers to it. All right. And here's one note, too, that I think is important. And I think that this is one thing that I think can be missed sometimes. I think when I was in the early days of leadership at Crosspoint, we could be tempted by this, and I think it's a temptation in church culture in general, is that an important thing about culture is that it can't be copied from somewhere else. So you guys are here learning from some remarkable leaders, a lot of other great churches, and the danger, the temptation is to go, okay, that church is doing that, so I need to copy that, because that will work. Now, part of the reason you're here is because there are great principles and practices that we can learn and we can share with each other, and so that's all really important, and I think it's how we serve and we can be the body of Christ, is sharing that stuff with each other. However, if you just mimic it, it is not going to serve your organization well because of those idiosyncrasies that make you unique. That team that you work with and your church as a whole, there is no other group of people that are, so think about this. Each one of you is uniquely wired and gifted and different, right? We know, I mean, all throughout Scripture, how God tells us about the unique wiring of how we're created. So then you put a group of people together, whether it's 10 or 10,000, And there's no other collection of people that is uniquely, that is exactly the same. Like that collection of different people and their giftedness and their strengths and their abilities and the context of in which they live and what that community is known for or does, like all of those things are unique, which makes what your church does unique as well, and then what your team does unique. So every individual team is its own unique thing. And so to try to just copy something, just copy and paste is not going to serve your team well. So that we need to look at best practices and then go, okay, how do we adapt that to our culture? What applies to our culture? So that's just a little side note, that if we seek to reproduce just another great organization's culture, on my website, jennycatherine.com, I recently did a series on culture. And there is an example of two different church staff values, or kind of their culture code of sorts. Two really great churches, both doing exceptional things. One of them is Crosspoint in Nashville that I worked with. The other one is Soul City Church in Chicago, good friends of mine. And if you look at those two documents, if you go to my website and look at it, they're totally different. And yet both of them are effectively living out the ministry and the calling that they have, but they have a very different, culture about their organization. So culture is your personality. And here's an important thing. It's born, and this is kind of what I'm getting at, it's born from who you are. So both if you're the senior leader, you have a lot of influence on culture. If you're part of the team, the collection of you guys as a team is shaping that culture. So we're going to talk about some truths about culture. I've never given this talk before all in one swoop, so we'll see how I do time-wise. Okay. I've done it in different segments. I did a 4-segment teaching block on it, and now I'm trying to cram it all together, so we'll see how this goes. So it's some truths about culture. Your culture exists whether you've defined it or not. So whether you've actually taken time to define it and clarify, well, what is our... And again, I'm talking mostly in the context of team. You can think through it either just as your working team or as your congregation, however you like. But it exists whether you've defined it or not. You have a culture. So it's there. It's building or it's eroding every day. Your culture is building or it's eroding every day. It does not stay stagnant. Part of that reason is because we're all living, breathing humans. And we are all growing and changing every day. And so our culture is always constantly changing and shifting. And here's why. Every person in the organization contributes to that culture. So every person is contributing to that culture. We'll talk in a minute when we talk more about the how. We'll talk about how every hire impacts culture. So the building and eroding is happening every day because every person in the team is contributing to that culture. If you're the leader, you have a disproportionate influence on the culture, right? Your voice just speaks louder. If you're in that senior leadership seat, how many of you are senior leaders in the room? We've got a good chunk. Okay, so you guys carry a disproportionate influence on the culture. If you're a church planter, then your organization, your church, probably reflects a lot of who you are, just the way you think, how you lead, what you value. It's just an overflow because God gave that vision to you and you're living out that vision. It's kind of an overflow of who you are. So you carry a disproportionate amount of influence. Now, I don't say that to stress you out or kind of freak you out. I just say that we need to be aware of that. We need to know that we have a good deal of influence on the culture. Culture cannot be ignored, or really maybe the phrasing should be, it should not be ignored. And culture is a lot more about the who and the why than the what and the how. And what I mean by that is culture is a lot about who is a part of the team and why you all are living out the mission that you're living out. The what and the how, the what you're doing and how you get it done those things are critical for the actual execution. But culture is really about the who and the why and being aware of that. Let's talk about some things that culture isn't. Culture is not a system or an isolated initiative. I will often see people who recognize, our staff culture is kind of getting wonky. Like, you know, things are going sideways, our team's starting to bicker, there's frustration, resentment. I mean, you fill in the blank about, but there's something in your culture that is starting to feel off. And a leader will come in and say, okay, let's just do a staff fun day. And that will just fix it. Or let's do an offsite meeting and talk about culture and do a bunch of team building stuff. Well, those things will be, could be helpful, but as just an isolated initiative, just an isolated moment, they're not going to fix. They're not going to change the culture. They're not, that's not, it's not going to be a one-time fix. So it's not a system or an isolated initiative. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We'll get a little bit in the how. We'll get a little bit to that, but you can pull more out of me there too. Yeah. It's not just a bunch of perks and fun stuff. So in the Bay Area, we're notorious for Google. If you work at Google, you don't need to leave the Google campus. I mean, everything you have is there. They'll wash your car for you. You can get your dry cleaning done. You can go bowling on lunch. You know, I mean, there's a big running track and basketball court. I mean, like, and that's their goal. Like, their organizational culture is to make your world, your nucleus, all about Google. People that work there love it because it's super convenient. But you know what Google's getting? Google's getting all their time, energy, and attention. Like, Google's getting their best out of them. So, it's strategic on their part, and it works for them. But there's also other things that go into what contributes to that culture. If they just had the fun stuff, but there are other things about their culture that was not good, it wouldn't. So what I often hear, especially in ministry settings, is, well, Jenny, we just don't have the budget to offer, you know, free lunches every day. Or, cause you hear about these things if you're, you know, reading different, like, business culture kind of stuff, and they'll talk about all these different perks for their employees. Well, I realize in ministry, we can't necessarily do that. But it's not just a bunch of perks and fun stuff. It's a lot more. And when we talked about the who and the why, it's a lot more about the who and the why. And that's the strength that we have as ministry leaders. It's not 30-hour work weeks or Fridays off in the summer. Sometimes you'll get staff people that'll come and say, well, you know, my friend's office, they close at noon on Fridays in the summer, or, you know, like, whatever it is. And those things, again, can contribute and can help with a thriving culture. But to just do that is not going to fix your culture. So they can be helpful. They're not harmful, but they're not it all on their own. And a great culture doesn't even mean you love it every day. So I have seen, it's kind of what I was talking about before, being a part of, you know, my early days at Forefront, doing a job like filing paperwork. It wasn't a glamorous job. I didn't actually love the work, but I loved the culture and I loved the team I was working with. So it does, and there are seasons, there are ebbs and flows of our work life. Y'all know this, that there will be times where, you know, you're energized and enjoying it. But culture, a great culture doesn't mean that every day is, you know, hi ho, it's off to work I go. We're all smiling, everything's great. Sometimes there are hard days, but it still can be a good culture. So what do we got next? Let's jump to, we'll come back to some of that stuff, but why does culture matter? And I would say, like, as we're talking, if there's things that trigger and you can start putting some definition to what your culture is, if you've never done that, you might just start creating kind of a side list of, well, what is good about our culture? Or what is bad about our culture? And start just kind of processing that too. But why does culture matter? I think culture matters because statistically, we'll spend about a third of our life working. A third of your day, a third of your year, a third of your life will be spent working. I mean, I think that was in a Forbes magazine article. So just practically, and if you go all the way back to creation, what did God tell us to do? Fill the earth and subdue it. Like, he gave us work to do. So we're not intended to sit idle. So there's work for us to do. We were made to work. So culture matters because I think as leaders, if we can create great environments for people to work, I think, like, that's significant. If somebody's going to spend a third of their life doing something, I hope we can create the best environment for them to do that in, right? I know that I want that for myself. I want to be a part of a culture where, or a part of a team where, if I'm going to spend a third of my life there, and sometimes more, especially those of you in leadership seats, then I'd love for it to be the best possible culture that it can be, with people that I'm enjoying working with, and we're getting something done together. So why does it matter? Sorry. Oh, baby.
Baby crying.
I know. Yeah, somebody's not happy. Second one, recruiting. This is, and these are a couple more practical ones. Why does culture matter? Recruiting. The better your culture, the more eager people will be to join your team. You guys know this. You've probably seen this. If you have a couple of different volunteer teams, you probably have a leader that they recruit people all day long. People enjoy volunteering with them. Like, you never get complaints out of that team. Then you've got another team that is constant rotating door, right? And you're going, what in the world is going on with that team? Like, it's just a revolving door. People are in and out. People are always, you know, giving up. And sometimes it can be the role, but a lot of times it has to do with the culture that's being created within that team. From a staffing perspective, the stronger your culture, the more people want to join your team, and there's a momentum that happens. That as your church and your team becomes known for being a great place to work, people want to go there. Like, they want to be a part of your team. They're willing to not get paid the best salary in town, and we all know our ministry salaries aren't all that big to begin with. But if it's a culture that's vibrant, healthy, growing, then people are going to be willing to work there for maybe an okay salary, as opposed to another great church in town that was willing to offer them a little bit more. But because the culture was strong and healthy, they actually want to be a part of your team. I once took a job at an organization that had it had a reputation for being a poor culture. And I thought, all right, I'm going to help fix this. But sadly, the reputation proved to be true, and I didn't stay there very long. Like, you know, I had hope for the culture continuing to get better and improve. But, you know, I was kind of the outlier in the culture. And I realized, you know what, this isn't going to be the best fit, and so it's probably better for me to move on. And you will attract better staff when your culture is healthy. So, and recruiting a ministry is hard because, you know, like, finding people who are qualified and skilled, especially as your organization grows, as your church grows, people who have experience and knowledge in the different ministry areas, finding great people for those roles is really challenging. And so you want to create a culture and a place where the best people want to be a part of your team. I'd also say it significantly impacts the retention. So these go hand in hand, the retention of your team. There's a study by the Queen School of Music and the Gallup organization that said disengaged workers had 37% higher absenteeism, 49% more accidents, and this, of course, is kind of across all types of industries, and 60% more errors and defects. So disengaged workers, so this is people who are not very engaged, not really connected to the culture, had 30% higher absenteeism, just not showing up or showing up late, 49% more accidents, and 60% more errors. And I suspect you guys can think of people right now, if you have somebody on your team who's really not fully engaged, not really fitting into the culture, you probably don't get your best work out of them. So that's just an easy statistic. And they say that replacing a single employee costs approximately 20% of that employee's salary. I mean, so we're getting just super practical. Like, you know, if there are any exec pastors or operational leaders in the room, like, this is just really practical stuff. Like, bottom line, really stewardship stuff. Of the more we can retain and we can keep our, particularly employees in this context, but even volunteers, because you guys know there's so much time and energy that goes into training and developing volunteers. And if they only stay for a few months in that role, then you've got to start all over again and train somebody new. And so there's a ton of effort and energy that's expended when there's a turnover. So that retention is really, really important. And then the fourth piece for why culture matters is loyalty. Staff want to stay when they have a sense of well-being, when they know they're part of a team that is has great vision, they know where they're going and why they're going there, when they're a part of a team where they feel cared for and valued and respected and they get to use their gifts. Again, it doesn't mean that they're always doing everything that they love. So, but people will stay a part of an organization when they know that, when the vision is strong and when they know that they're cared for as an individual. So ultimately, culture matters significantly to you as the leader and the individuals on your team. So for you as a leader, there's just some strategic stuff here of just recruiting, retention, that loyalty is so valuable, but it also is valuable to that employee in that they want to be a part of something that they fully believe in and feel like they're a part of. And you both benefit when your culture is strong, engaging, and inspiring. So let's talk about how. Everybody doing okay?
Yes.
Okay. How do we create it? First, I would say we need to be aware of it and why it matters. Probably don't need to camp out on it because you're here means you're aware of it, and you must care enough about it to know that it matters to be able to spend some time here. So just being aware of it and why it matters. The second thing that I would say is you need to define the culture that you want. So if you haven't really sat down to define your culture as an organization or as a team, you need to spend some time defining it. So as we were talking earlier about some of the different companies and organizations, and you were quickly rattling off what was good about those cultures, well, spend some time just thinking about your team and saying, what's good about our culture? What's good about, when you go back to that definition of it's a way of thinking and behaving, it's the values that your team subscribes to. What are the things that are good about your culture? And so starting with that, I would start with a list of what's good about our culture currently, what's not so good about our culture currently, what would we like to be good about our culture in the future. So just starting to get some clarity on each of those pieces. Define it, what's good, what's not so good, what would we like to be good in the future. So just sitting with that, and that might be something that you do even as a team, to say, part of natural progression in most organizations is that, especially in church plants, you'll start with a vision and mission for the church. You might define church values. Could be spiritual growth, Bible reading. You're going to define a couple of those core things that are values that you want the whole congregation to subscribe to. But then I would say, oftentimes, rarely do I see a church staff that defines the values that they want their staff or their volunteers to live by until like later in the game. So usually we're not defining that at the front end. If you have already, then you're like ahead of the game, which is awesome. So you're not behind necessarily if you haven't done it yet, but I would say it's time to do it now. It's time to start clarifying. Because you, again, when I said earlier, you have culture whether you've defined it or not. So now you want to get clear on, well, what is it? If you walked into my house today, you would quickly see what we value as a family. Like, you would quickly pick up on the culture of our family. There are going to be stacks of books everywhere because I buy more books than I can possibly read because I value learning and growing, right? So you're going to quickly pick that up. You're going to know that's part of our culture, that I spend a lot of time studying and reading. We are super athletic. We live on the West Coast right now, so we spend a lot of time outdoors. So you're going to see the bike helmet or the running shoes or you're going to come in, and before long, you're going to see all of that sports stuff kind of hanging out. So you quickly, I am a tea aficionado. Like, I don't drink coffee. I only drink tea. And I'm kind of a snob about this. So when you come into my house, I have this, and if you're there for any amount of time, I'm going to show you how this tea maker works and how remarkable it is and how it takes the tea and it brews it to the perfect temperature for the type of tea that it is, and it steeps it for the exact minutes that is perfect for that type of tea. You're my girl right there. Those are just the little things that I value, that are important to me, things that I enjoy. And so when you come into my home, you're going to see some of those cultural values. Hopefully you'll see the Bible and some, things that represent my faith too. But you get it, right? And I bet if I came into any one of your houses without putting values or describing your culture on the wall, you have a culture. Like, your family has a culture. It has things that you value significantly. So the same is true of your team. And so I would just say it's time to start just defining that, putting it on paper. The third one there is model it. Model it. If you're not living it as a leader, no one else will. Ouch, sorry. I'm kind of known for being the one that gives you a swift kick in the pants in these sessions, so I'm sorry about that. If you're not living it, no one else will. So it starts with us. Everything rises and falls on leadership. Famous John Maxwell quote. So lead yourself well to lead others better. Like, look for ways that you're modeling it. If there are things that you want to be, that are true about your culture or that you want to be true about your culture, then make sure that you're modeling it. You're living it out. Review what you've defined and be intentional to make sure it's part of how you are, how you're living out your leadership. Determine what you need to do to really live out the values and beliefs you've defined. So if there's some things that you would like to be true about your culture, but it's not part of your personal habits, then I would really evaluate, okay, is it realistic for it to be a part of your culture? If it's really just not an overflow of who you are collectively as a team. Sometimes there's a value in your team that, you know you're not great about it as a leader. In my last session, I was talking about the four dimensions of leadership that are heart, soul, mind, and strength, and how all four leaders need to lead from all four of those dimensions. And I talked about how I sometimes don't lead with a lot of heart. I'm very strategic, so I lead with a lot of mind and strength, a lot of the strategy and vision. That's what comes naturally to me. So I have to purposely put people around me who have a little bit more heart in their leadership. They're a little more relational. The same is true here in culture. So there might be something in your culture that you feel like is really important to the team, but you know you're probably not going to be the best at it. Doesn't mean you just abandon it and like give up on it, right? You seek to grow in it, but there might be somebody on your team who you say, you know what, you really live this value out well, and we need more of that in our culture, so I need you to help me champion that. I need you to help me know when I'm not doing it well and give me some, coach me on it, and this is a really good act of humility as a leader, is to really lean into some of your other team members and tell them, hey, I see you do this better than me. Can you bring more of that to the team? Can you coach me on that when I should grow, when I'm not aware of it? So there's places like that too, where I'm not just saying just abandon it because you're not good at it, but do have a realistic eye on it to say, is that a realistic thing for us to live out as a team? And is there somebody who does that really well that I could help give some, ask them to step up and help us do that better? Is that making sense? Okay. Number four, hire for it. And you'll hear me come back to this theme all the time about recruiting and hiring and how, building your team. And when I say hire for it, recruit for it from a volunteer perspective, too. Sometimes we just want warm bodies, but that can also create a lot of trouble for us if they're people who are not a great cultural fit or don't really align with our values or our vision or our mission. And then that becomes a whole nother, kind of mess we have to figure out. And so you want to strategically hire for culture. Early in our teams, we'll often just kind of hire haphazardly. Usually small teams, when you start hiring, you just start hiring people that are close to you that are willing to do it for nothing or for really cheap. And that can be okay. And oftentimes, there'll be naturally people who are aligned with your culture anyway. But as your organization grows, every person impacts culture. So kind of going back to that, every person impacts culture. So every time you add somebody to your team, you are changing your culture. Remember, culture is building or eroding every day. So every time you add somebody, you're changing that culture. And hopefully you're making a hire that helps keep moving the needle of that culture in the direction that you want it to go, right? So you've got to be strategic about this. Oftentimes we don't have a lot of processes in place for hiring in our, smaller teams and ministries and churches. And so I can't champion this enough, that be slow, slow, slow to hire. I mean, take your time, have things in place that help you really discern whether that person is going to be a great fit for your organization. It doesn't mean everybody's the same. So there's a caution in there, and that sometimes we'll say, well, you end up hiring everybody like you. No, actually, you want to hire people that complement you, but you want them to have share the same core values, those cultural elements that they really can help live that out well. So you want to build it into everything from job descriptions to performance reviews to your interview questions. You want to make sure as you're doing all of those things that you're really testing for culture in your interview questions, figuring out if somebody is going to value some of the same things the rest of your team values. And again, that can show up in one of the values at Crosspoint was, I think they may have reworded this since then, but it was, the last 10%. I think this is a Bill Hybels thing of, that when we're, when we're having a dialogue together as a team and we share, and it could be a little bit, heated conversation or, a disagreement on something, and we're talking, and then there's always that little bit we kind of leave unsaid. And the commitment from them as a team was, we're going to share that last 10%. We're going to share the last thing on our mind. We're not going to walk out the door and have a hallway conversation with somebody. We're going to make sure we share that as a team. Now, we do that respectfully. We do it kindly. All of those things. But we're committed to saying, I'm not going to go have a hallway conversation or gripe about something. I'm going to make sure I say it here to the whole team. So that was one of their values. Well, in their interview process, they could build interview questions to test for that. Is it somebody who's not going to be passive aggressive and not actually really share what they're thinking and feeling about something? I want to make sure I'm hiring people to the team who are going to show up and honestly share what they think so that we can get to the best ideas and information. Does that make sense? And just give you a couple for instances on that. So there's ways to do that where you're really integrating those core things that are important to you as a team into even your hiring process. The fifth, devote time, energy, and resources to culture keeping. So I told you that it isn't just the fun stuff, but it can be the fun stuff. And I said devote time, energy, and resources. So the first thing is just devote time. Just focus from you as a leader of talk about it often. Talk about the things that you value as a team and why they matter. A number of the organizations that I see that do this really well, they will have their staff values, you know, that culture code on the wall. And they will look for opportunities to talk about it all the time. At both of the churches that I worked at, we would, every staff meeting, we would talk about the values. And usually it wasn't we talked about every one of them every meeting, but I would pick one of them and we'd reinforce it with either just a little more teaching on it, or we'd reinforce it with a story. If we saw somebody living out that value that week, we would highlight it and celebrate it. And you think that people are getting tired of it, but every time you can talk about the culture and the values that you want to be true of your culture, you're reinforcing it and you're helping the team really embody it. You can create some events and staff trips to focus on it. So when I told you it's not episodic, that's true, but you can, if those things are part of the whole, they can be really valuable. And then if it comes to resources, you know, a lot of times those kind of ideas can just be way too expensive. We got super creative with this. So one of the values at Crosspoint was do more with less. Like, we never had enough budget for ministry. Now, who does, right? But there was one particular year. We typically always did, like, an annual staff trip. And we would, you know, go away for a night, you know, rent a, you know, kind of cottage or resort kind of thing. And we would maybe have an outside guest speaker or we'd do extra teaching. But we kind of devote to just vision and planning work as a team. And one particular year, the budget was extra tight. I mean, we always did these kind of super cheap, but this particular year was extra tight. And we thought, you know what, we might have to cut the staff trip. Like, I don't know if we can do this. And our team sat around the table and we're like, you know what, the team is already working so hard because the budgets are lean. This was probably 08, 09 when the market was tough anyway, so all of us were feeling the pinch. So we sat around the table going, you know what, our staff are already doing everything they can. If we take away the event that they always look forward to, it's actually going to be a culture breaker. Like, it's going to be a ding in the culture if we take away the fun stuff that, you know, when everybody's working so extra hard. So we thought, well, what do we do? You know, this is like, we don't really have the budget. How do we do this? So we came up with this concept of Crosspoint goes to camp. And we thought, you know what, we're just going to theme this out. This is going to be silly, but it's going to be fun, and it's going to be a culture builder. And basically, we rented out the little, like, dirty, nasty cabins at the local state park. So we went to one of our state parks. No offense to anybody who's ever worked in the state park system, but those cabins are really kind of rough. But we rented out, like, a little collection of the cabins at the state park, and everybody brought their sleeping bags and all their toiletries. And we, Crosspoint, went to camp. And we totally themed it out. We did field games, you know, so we were, like, doing field games as, like, some of our fun, competitive, fun stuff. Everybody had kitchen duty. So every team got assigned kitchen duty. And so it was, we made burgers and hot dogs on the grill as our meals. So super cheap, not entirely healthy, but super cheap. And we just, I mean, you know, we did s'mores over the fire, and, like, we just themed it out from beginning to end as Crosspoint goes to camp. And we smelled so awful coming back in the church van, But, guys, it was one of our best cultural moments, and we almost killed it because we were afraid, well, we can't do it, we don't have enough budget, and we got really creative about how to do it super cheap. Now, that doesn't work for everybody's culture, but it worked for our culture. And so sometimes it takes a little more effort or initiative to kind of figure out, okay, how do we push for this, even when resources might be a little tight or restricting, but culture keeping is just so critical and so valuable. And I think if we had not done that event, it would have been a really, it probably, again, culture's building or eroding. It helped us build and kind of continue to grow our culture rather than decline. So it was really powerful for us. The other thing to keep in mind when you're devoting time, energy, and resources to culture keeping is that the bigger your teams get, whether it's staff teams or volunteer teams, the bigger they get, the more difficult it becomes for culture to just be caught. So again, if you're in a pretty young church plant right now, you probably all sit around the table together, and you all kind of know the culture. It's kind of caught. You know, like the things that you value, the things that are important to you as an organization or as a team, it's kind of caught. But as soon as those teams start getting bigger, then you have to find systems to actually teach the culture so that you're making sure that people know, again, what matters and why it matters and just the, kind of the expectations. Like it's kind of the code of conduct for the team. Some ways to do this. I'm going back to Crosspoint a lot just because there's just good examples there from that. I was there in such a long duration of that story. But we... for the first probably 5 years, we all did staff lunch or staff meeting together, followed by staff lunch together. Now, we all paid for our own lunch, but we went out to the local Mexican place and all had lunch together. It was a great cultural moment. And in those moments, as we're all sitting around the table, we're reinforcing the things that matter to us. We're talking about the things that are important as a team. And so it just, culture could be caught. We didn't have to have a process for teaching culture. As we got bigger and it was impossible for us to sit around the table like that, we started seeing, and then as we had multiple locations, you know, so you had people scattered all over in different offices at different locations. This is true of some of your volunteer teams. They're all in different places all the time. And so no longer could we actually just expect culture to be caught. We had to teach it. And so I started a class called Culture Shock, where every new employee had a six-month class that they were a part of. It was a two-hour once a month, and we would teach through the six core values of our staff. And myself, the senior pastor, some of the rest of the executive team would teach these classes. So it was a priority that the senior leaders were teaching the class because we really wanted to reinforce from the top down, this matters, this is significant. And then, in the early days, that meant... there maybe were one or two people in the class. So it kind of felt a little like, well, you know, you sit around a little table and you talk about it, it's more conversational. Now when they do that class, they probably have 12 to 15 people in it because their staff has grown and, you know. But looking for those systems and those ways to kind of really embed talking about your culture and what it means into your ongoing practices as an organization. When I've talked about culture a lot, I'll get a lot of people who ask, how do you, if you're not in the senior leadership seat, how do you impact culture from the middle? Oh, and I'm running out of time. Yikes. Guys, we've got so much more to go. So I'm going to fly through this really quick. If you're not in the senior leadership seat, I would say kind of to go back through these points a little bit. Start with your circle of influence, the team that you lead, and create a great culture within the team that you lead. Start with the circle you have influence with, and do your best to create the best possible culture you can there. And then revisit these five keys, and look for ways that you can define it, model it, modeling it to the rest of the organization, even if they're not all living it, that you're kind of modeling the things you value. And then seek out your leaders and ask for their thoughts about the culture and how you can help be a positive contributor to having a great culture as a team. So sometimes just that leading up of just saying, not pointing it out and going, our culture sucks, hey, how can I help continue to create a great environment for our team? And being willing to lead up in that way. And there's probably more I could say about that, but I'm gonna skip over that to give you just the hows really fast. And here's what I'll do, guys. If you're interested in the videos that I've done on this, that will just have a little more space, just email me, Jenny, J-E-N-N-I, @jennycatron.com, J-E-N-N-I, CATRON.com. And just ask me to email you the culture videos, and I'll email those to you guys because I don't have them publicly on my website because they were kind of exclusively to my email list. But if you'll email me, I'll send it to you.
What are they called? Culture videos.
Culture videos. That'll be all I need to know. Yeah. Okay, so how do we change culture? I'm going to give you 9 different things. 4 of them are part of the preparation of changing a culture, and then the last 5 are implementation. I'm going to roll through these pretty quickly and because we've only got 4 minutes. So... Sorry, but I can send you the video on this, so just email me. So preparation, just clarify what needs to change. We've talked about that. Define it. Seek to understand why your culture is the way it is. Your culture got to where it is today for a reason. So if you're part of an organization that's been around a long time, like I was at Crosspoint at Menlo Park, which is a 142-year-old organization, there's a reason why the culture is the way it is, and some wonderful people helped shape the culture. So if I go in there guns blazing trying to help change and fix the culture, if I'm not aware of what helped shape the culture to where it is today, I could do some irreparable damage. So there needs to be a sensitivity of why is the culture the way it is? If there's something I feel like needs to change, I just need to first make sure I understand why it is the way it is. So the point 3 would kind of reinforce that. Listen a lot. Really listen for why, what has helped make the culture the way it is. And then 4, this is all preparation for changing. Recruit allies. Now, in this, I don't mean like recruit your army to help you fight against the culture and like raw, but I'm saying find the people who are early adopters who kind of get it and want to help be a positive influence in helping shape and change culture, and get them to partner with you to help influence that change. And then, if you're going to implement culture, 5 things here. How do we change it via implementation? 1, cast vision. We all know vision leaks, and so we need to be casting vision often and helping people understand why certain things matter, why the values you defined are so important and so critical. 2 would be patient and go slow. That culture changing is not an overnight thing. It's not episodic, like I talked about earlier. It is a slow process. So you have to have defined it well. You need to cast vision for it. But then you need to be patient, and you need to keep reminding people of why the values that you're trying to instill are so important and so critical. So just be patient and go slow. Invite feedback. Find people on your team who you can honestly ask about how everybody is experiencing changes that you might be making. Because everybody's going to experience it differently. Depending on how long they've been with the organization, they're going to have different opinions on that. So you want to keep getting feedback. How are people reacting to a change, some of the culture changes we're trying to make? Be honest about your team. If you've done your part as a leader to lead well through culture change, you've defined what needs to change, you've vision cast for it well, if there are still team members that are resistant and just don't want to go where you need to go, then it might be time for them to go. Now, this you need to get to this place slowly, but sometimes I think, especially in ministries, we will keep making excuses for why people stay. And if they're really not with us, and if they're really not with the future and the direction and the values we've subscribed to, and we've really done our part as a team, one of the things that I just kind of keeps me awake at night is that oftentimes we as leaders haven't fully done our part before we do let somebody go. So we've got to make sure we've done our part. Have we defined it? Have we clarified it? Have we vision cast for it? Have we given them an opportunity? Have we reinforced it? Have we listened to them? But then we need to be honest about whether maybe that they're just not a great culture fit anymore. And then this probably should be the first and the last, right? Pray. And if you have time, and you guys probably know this, like going back to the book of Nehemiah, you talk about somebody who really changed. He led through a remarkable moment in rebuilding the wall of Jerusalem, but it's a case study in navigating change. So there's a lot of culture work that's done in this too. But what I love about Nehemiah's story is that if you read back through Nehemiah, how many times he prays, and how many times it tells us he prayed throughout that whole process. And so, just being reminded that the wisdom and discernment to lead well is our greatest asset as a leader. And so when we're leading through things like culture that significantly impacts people, because it can be quite personal, that when we slow down and we just keep going back to God in prayer and seeking wisdom and discernment, ultimately that's our greatest how, right? Okay, so remember this. Leadership shapes human lives. And for that reason, it is sacred, sacred work. And you get the responsibility of stewarding that. And culture keeping is a big part of the work that we get to do as leaders and as teams. So I'm sorry we flew through the end of that, but I hope that was helpful. Email me and I'll send you other stuff. So thank you all so much.